Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Well, fresh off a trip to Commodity Classic in Houston, got the coffee flowing and ready for some great conversations here at the back in studio for this episode of AOA, Agriculture of America. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, and feeling refreshed after a long week in Houston, Texas, last week for Commodity Classic. Coming up on today's show, we're going to share a few conversations that I was able to have during my time in Houston. In segment three, we're going to get an update on spring logistics, water levels, issues around the world when it comes to the Panama Canal and the Red Sea and more. Mike Steenhoek, Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. I talked with him while I was in Houston. We'll hear that conversation coming up in segment three today. And then in segment four, we're going to hear some comments from the newly elected chairman of the U.S. Soybean Export Council, Lance Rezac. I had that conversation as well at Commodity Classic last week. He'll join us in segment four. Coming up in segment two, we'll get an update on weather for the week ahead with DTN meteorologist John Baranek as well here on AOA. Brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. Let's take a look at what's happening in the markets to kick off today's program. Finding a little bit of green on the commodity screen to start off the week on Monday. Joining us for a conversation, Darren Newsome, Senior Market Analyst at Bar Chart. Darren, thanks for joining us once again. Hope you had a fantastic weekend, Darren.
Yeah, it was a nice weekend. And, you know, I know everybody's now back from Commodity Classic. It's been many years since I've been to that. But as you said, you can have a lot of good conversations at that conference.
You definitely can. And a lot of conversations I had surrounding the markets in particular, Darren. A lot of folks wondering, okay, where's the bottom at in these grain markets, especially corn? A lot of U.S. farmers, a lot of Brazilian farmers, was some of the talk around the Commodity Classic, are undersold, of course. And, you know, you kind of highlighted this as your morning commentary, that old saying, you know, about March, in like a lion, out like a lamb. Well, so far, it feels like kind of sort of in like a lion maybe here, at least if I'm, you know, looking at this quote screen right on Monday. What's your take with this market action we're getting here to start off the month?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we saw a little bit heading into the weekend back on March 1st. So, you know, we come out of the weekend and most commodity sectors are in the green. I think there was only one that was in the red at that time. And that was the U.S. financials, which U.S. Treasury futures with, you know, all the jobs data coming out later this week. So, you know, we are seeing a little bit of buying in here. To me, it's seasonal. You know, this is the time of year when the energy sector, when grain sectors, they just tend to go higher. One of the things I'll be interested in here later in your program is to listen to your conversation with Lance, with USSEC, because, you know, I think a key to what happens here, you know, from here on out with the U.S. is what happens in the soybean market. You know, we're starting to see some of that usual overnight activity that hints at some export business being done. It's not really showing up on the weekly sales and shipments tables as of last Thursday's report. You know, we're still running 20% behind on total sales from the previous marketing year. So it'll be interesting to hear what Lance has to say and the developments as far as U.S. Exports go. But overall, yeah, I think this is more of a seasonal move. In both corn and soybeans right now, I think we're seeing some short covering. I'm not seeing a lot of commercial support, but maybe it starts to materialize. Maybe it starts to show up here over the coming weeks.
Well, thinking about some of that demand too, I just a note on Monday morning early, got some soybean cake and meals sold to unknown destinations, and corn to Taiwan. That's something I didn't have on my bingo card to start off the week. So a little demand perking up there, at least to start off the month of March. But also, too, Darren, I know you watched the CFTC Commitment to Traders reports, and I know we've still been record short or near record short in many of these grains. Is some of that lessening up a little bit? What did we see on Friday's report?
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, if we go back and look at the Tuesday to Tuesday closes, May corn was down 9 cents. So that would certainly indicate or certainly hint at the non-commercial position actually grew. The futures position actually, net short actually grew, but instead it was actually decreased by 30 some odd thousand contracts. So that was an interesting development in Friday CFTC reports. Conversely, we saw, you know, we did see a lower soybean market from Tuesday to Tuesday. And then to find out on Friday that the funds had actually added another 30 some thousand contracts to their net short position in soybeans. So, you know, the fact that we saw some buying to close out the week after Tuesday was not a huge surprise. Again, it looked to be a lot like some short covering going on. And now we'll see again if we actually start to see some commercial interest develop. You know, we saw the cash index drop below $11. Is that inviting enough for end users and possibly some exporters to get interested in the U.S. market? Or is Brazil's crop going to be large enough and are their supplies going to be large enough to basically keep, you know, demand for U.S. soybeans on the sidelines yet, you know, through the last half of the marketing year?
I know, too, looking at crude oil, OPEC, I believe, announced on Sunday they're going to continue their voluntary output curbs here. And crude oil, I know, went up to new high or, you know, recent highs, I think 16-week highs on Friday, something like that. Still a little bit higher here on Monday. What's your take on this energy market and how that's affecting things right now, Darren?
Couple different ways to look at this. One, the moves that we're seeing in energies again are seasonal. The fact that they're all starting to move higher, this is what we normally see this time of year. And two, you know, these announcements from OPEC Plus, certainly there's a political side to it as well, given, you know, we're getting that much closer to the U.S. Presidential elections and some other elections around the world. So, you know, it's a very political move, very political statements that that continue to be made with these production cuts. I don't really think they're market related at all. I think we will see higher markets, but we would have seen higher markets again based on seasonals. I know the U.S. has ramped up its production. It's interesting that the U.S. has become the leading, the leading exporter in the world now. So that's an interesting development, or at least the leading producer. Let me put it that way. And I thought that was an interesting development.
I'm watching this wheat market too, watching some of the weather in the plains for Kansas City wheat, but moderate strength here after we kind of had what felt like a little bit of a flush out on Friday's trade, Darren. Your thoughts on this wheat complex as a whole right now?
Yeah, the contract to watch is the July KC. We set a new contract low last week of 550 and a half. Then we closed the week at 555 and a half and then dropped down immediately overnight, but we didn't take that new low out. And so wheat, you know, July Kansas City new crop looks to be flattening out in here. And I think attention is starting to go to the weather. I know the forecasts are calling for good conditions, you know, here in early March, but we'll see. I mean, you know, the southern plains are still going to need some moisture. Yes, they're in a better situation than they've been for a number of years, but, you know, the crop is still going to need some moisture as everything starts to warm up and the crop starts to grow again. So, you know, again, I think all eyes will be on the weather forecasts. And that'll certainly come into play again because, you know, funds are still holding net shorts and wheat across the board.
Well, we'll see if some of this positivity across the grain complex can hold here as we start off the week. With that, Darren Newsom, Senior Market Analyst at Bar Chart. Darren, always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on again, Jesse.
All right. Coming up next here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease is created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at Cenex.com. We'll be joined by DTN's John Baranek to take a look at weather on the way next here on AOA, Agriculture of America.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, as we discuss how cooperatives support farmers and ranchers and build strong communities. Each week, we'll chat with voices from throughout the cooperative system. From global market access to local expertise, we'll explore how co-op ownership means you own a world of opportunities. Tune in on Tuesdays or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your card donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
Farming is dangerous. There's dangers all around us. We work around it and we live around it every day. And we just become desensitized to what's around us.
We go through safety training and, you know, we try and do these things to make sure accidents don't happen, but you just never know.
There are so many farmers that I think take for granted all of the underground utilities that are there.
You don't want to hit a gas pipe because that's your life. The other part of it is if you hit certain things, you're liable for it.
I mean, we kind of know what's out here, but all at the same time, you just always call.
FarmSafe 811 starts with you. Whether you're installing drain tile or doing any sort of digging, always call 811 and wait for any underground lines to be marked and have the depth confirmed. That's farming with care. But if a line does get damaged, go somewhere safe and call 911.
Always keep safety in the back of your mind. Just stay humble.
For more information, go to farmsafe811.org.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Hard work, long hours, and extreme conditions aren't new. Cenex Premium Diesel meets the demands of today's toughest engines. Premium diesel to keep you going. Learn more at Cenex.com or find your nearest Cenex location and trust your local experts at Cenex. Well, let's take a look at weather as we are fully into the month of March now. And our next guest here on AOA, I missed him at Commodity Classic in Houston, but he's joining us right now. DTN meteorologist John Baranek is with us. John, thanks for joining us, and hope you had a great couple of days there in Houston. We were chatting during the commercial break. I was running around so much that I didn't get a chance to find you and say hi in person, but glad we could get you back on the show here today.
Yeah, it would have been nice to meet up again, Jesse. It's always good to see your face. Your voice is nice, but it's good to see your face too.
Well, we'll have to plan that better in our schedules at Commodity Classic next time we are at that event, or the next trade show that we are at, John. But you know, it was quite a wild weather week last week across the country. I mentioned this right before we came back from break too. Is like Houston, it was in like the 80s, and then that cold front, that big cold front came through, and it felt like it was 40 something in Houston for a day or so, and then things started to kind of warm back up. I know though too, with that big cold front, it brought a lot of wind. We have, of course, the devastating wildfires in the southwestern plains. We've seen some precipitation here in the last week or so. John, get us up to speed. We kind of wrapped up the month of February and started the month of March with some wild weather activity in some parts of the country.
Yeah, you came back to the show with the song Caught in the Crossfire, and I don't know if you did that on purpose, but you know that
I did not.
The wildfires down there in Texas, you know, kind of raging quite a bit, and you know they grew just massively to the largest wildfire in Texas history, in just a couple days, really. I mean, when you got wind speeds of 50 miles an hour pushing it, and then you got a cold front and it, you know, the winds shifted direction and pushed it, you know, to the south afterwards. I mean, it's devastating. I think lucky enough for some crop producers down there, it was more cattle country. You know, obviously we're going to have some issues with cattle and what's going down there, some grazing that they'll need to help out with. And hopefully some of the dry soils down there get some water this week to help them with that. Luckily though, we do have kind of a wild week of weather that should help them out, at least I think on the whole, rather than hurting them. We do have a cold front that's moving through the country, and we had some records up in Minnesota and across a lot of the upper Midwest yesterday before that front came in. And today that front's going to kind of move through the Mississippi Valley, through the Southern Plains, and we'll see that spark off some showers and thunderstorms. We might see a little bit of severe weather out of it, kind of along the Mississippi Valley, but nothing too major, I don't think. But it will produce some pretty good showers there. It's going to miss the wildfire areas out in the plains. And really, most of the plains will stay dry here today with this one. But we got another storm system moving into the west here on Thursday, and that's going to be producing a big storm system there for the central and southern plains Thursday into Friday. And, that one looks to be a lot more widespread precipitation down there. So from Nebraska all the way through Texas, and that looks like we're going to see some widespread showers. It's going to be cold enough for a little bit of snow in some areas. Texas Panhandle could see some snow out of it on Friday night. Anything down there for precipitation would help them battle those wildfires and help the wheat that's waking up out of dormancy down there. There is one concern about, behind the system, it is a little breezy, so that might, help those fires grow. But if it's raining at the same time, it might not be too bad. And, give those firefighters down there at least some sort of break and helping them with the containment. That system, though, just continues to move eastward through Friday and through the weekend, and it's widespread showers and thunderstorms across most of the country. The only area that really skips out on it is the northern plains, and they got some pretty heavy snow over the weekend here up into the Canadian prairies especially. But they'll see a little bit of showers here through the front half of the week, but they'll be pretty dry. That system kind of misses them to the south. So overall, we've got some heavy rain moving through with a couple of systems, maybe some light snow in some spots, but for the most part, it's rain. And even behind these systems, it's still warm. I mean, we just cannot get cold air to move into the country for an extended period of time. It just hasn't set up yet. We're looking at the second half of the month, possibly for that, but at least for now, for the next 2 weeks, we're still warm.
Well, and thinking about how warm things are, I've been kind of keeping my eye on some of the soil temperatures as well throughout parts of the Midwest. And, I'm even seeing some of those soil temperatures up around that kind of that key 50 degree level in, parts of Iowa, even into southern Minnesota, southern Wisconsin, some of these areas. And I know that we could stand to get a little bit of help with subsoil moisture, John. So if we can catch the precipitation here with warmer soils, I would have to think that instead of some of that, running off when it would still be ice typically in many spots, some of that could maybe soak in and be beneficial here, John, if we can get some.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Jesse, because the soil temps were what I was just looking at right before we got onto the air. And, even if you get, the very top, 2.5 inch, you're seeing 50 degrees all the way up into Minnesota. And that's kind of ridiculous for this time of year. But even that 4 inch soil temperature, it's in the 50s in Kansas and in Missouri and southern Illinois. I mean, it's at that point when folks are starting to think about, hey, it's warm enough to start planting corn. I don't know if I'd be planting corn in early March, but it's been so warm over this winter and now into early spring that it's going to coax a lot of producers out there, say, hey, maybe I can get this in a little early. And with the rain coming through here this week, that's definitely, like you said, it's going to be soaking into the ground. It's not going to be frozen and running off. So that's a good sign for a lot of folks here. But the one thing I would do is be very cautious about planting here early. I mentioned some potential for some cooler air coming in the second half of the month. I think I did at least.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Okay, good. that would be, a big concern is that if we do get, another change in the pattern here for the second half of the month, If you start planting a little too early, you might get bit a little bit with some frost later. We're not exactly sure how cold that might get here later this month, but it does look like a pretty good shot of at least below normal temperatures for the second half of the month. So, you know, that may cause some delays. It may kind of just hold things where we need to. Maybe, you know, we don't need the temperatures to get real nice and summery right now, because then we start losing soil moisture, right? You know, we can't keep up with it with some of these systems moving through. So it'd be nice to cool them down just a touch so they're not too warm, and keep the country active with getting some showers in. I think a lot of folks would be happy about that. So hopefully that continues to be the case.
Definitely. I hope that continues to be the case as well. John, a couple minutes here. South America, any updates on kind of what you're seeing? Brazil, Argentina, I've seen a few different systems in the forecast down there, a few different waves. What's the latest for South America, John?
Yeah, I mean, if we take South America as a whole, it sure looks wet this week, and they've got lots of stuff going on. If you look at kind of central Brazil, the wet season showers are pretty active here this week. May not be, you know, super active in all the spots they need them to be, but overall it's pretty good. Then there's this front hanging around northern Argentina and southern Brazil. It's going to be kind of waffling around with showers this week for most of the areas there. And then you've got several little systems moving up into southern Argentina this week that should be bringing showers too. So, I mean, if you look at kind of South America as a whole, looks pretty good, pretty wet. And, you know, a lot of the soybeans have already been pulled out of the ground in Brazil, and more than half of the safrinha corn has been planted. If you look kind of in the state of Mato Grosso do Sul, 90% of their corn has already been planted. So they're, you know, right on schedule or even a little bit ahead. So everything is going well, I think, right now for central Brazil. The issue we're looking at, though, is the soil moisture in that area. And that's, I think, the biggest concern going forward. They've got okay soil moisture for now, but when these wet season rains shut off in about 6 weeks or so, 6 to 8 weeks, we're going to be, or their corn is going to be in their kind of pollinating stages at that point. And what they really hope for is getting through that with these wet season showers going, and then relying on that subsoil moisture to fill out their crop. Well, if they don't have a whole lot of subsoil moisture to stuck around, they're not going to have a whole lot to fill out their corn crop. So that's good. That's the big concern with South America going forward. You know, they've got good showers now, but you know, it doesn't last long. They haven't been able to build up that soil moisture like they normally do over their summer wet season. And that's something that we're going to be definitely concerned about going forward. Other than that, I mean, Argentina looks pretty good, and southern Brazil does as well.
Well, we'll keep our eyes on the latest forecasts. I know folks can check out the latest from DTN at dtnpf.com. With that, meteorologist John Baranek with DTN. John, always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us here on AOA this week.
Thanks, Jesse. Good to talk to you, too. Maybe next time we'll see you.
Yeah, maybe next time we will see you there at Commodity Classic or an upcoming trade show. John Baranek with DTN here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Up next, we'll talk with Mike Steenhoek, Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, here on AOA.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. 800-926-1701. That's 800-926-1701.
You're listening to AOA. Here's a check of the markets for the American Ag Network. Jesse Allen with you here. Let's take a look at things early on Monday session. Some moderate strength in the grain complex being led by soybeans and soybean meal, with moderate gains in corn and in wheat contracts as well, seeing some double-digit gains start to work their way into Kansas City wheat. Now, we did get some export sales reported on Monday morning, 110,000 metric tons of corn to Taiwan for the current marketing year, while we also saw 126,000 metric tons of soybean cake and meal to unknown destinations, with a about 30,000 of that for the current marketing year and the balance for the 24-25 marketing year. Now, we see the grains and oilseeds going to be trying to find some decent money flow. OPEC Plus announcing yesterday it will extend its voluntary oil output curbs, totaling 2.2 million barrels per day in the second quarter of this year, providing some support for prices. The anticipated move pushed WTI crude oil prices solidly above $80 per barrel on Friday for the first time since November 7th. Crude oil prices are firmer this morning after pushing to those fresh 16-week highs on Friday. We see crude oil up just slightly, about $80.15 a barrel here at last check. Now, in case of the grains and oilseeds, we got a WASDE report coming up later this week, and we're going to be watching some of the latest numbers out for South America and some of the numbers that get plugged into the balance sheets here. Not expecting much in the way of significant changes when that report comes out later this week, but no doubt it'll be something that's a talking point in the market later on here this week. Meantime, over in the livestock arena, some moderate losses in cattle and hog futures as we start off the week. It's been a really strong run in this hog market, so maybe taking a little profit to start off the week of trade on Monday. That's Check of the Markets. You're listening to AOA. I'm Jesse Allen reporting.
A promise is potent. Born of intention, fueled by commitment, it's seeing things through, always showing up. And we know a thing or two about promises here at Susan G. Komen. Over 40 years ago, we locked arms with you toward one vision, a world without breast cancer. By investing in life-saving research and standing up for patient rights, we are shifting the system so all people everywhere get the care they deserve. Because if you've just been diagnosed and don't know where to turn, we've got you. If you can't afford the treatment you need, we've got you. And if you are driven to raise money to honor the best friend you've just lost, we have a place for you here. Because of you, we're supporting those who need help today while tirelessly searching for tomorrow's cures. Ending breast cancer needs all of us. Visit Komen.org and be a part of the Susan G. Komen community today.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex Premium Diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. Well, last week during Commodity Classic at Houston, I sat down with Mike Steenhook, Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, to talk about logistics and water levels and more. Here is that interview.
It's good to see you here. Thanks for joining me today.
It's good to be with you, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk. I want to catch up on all things transportation, logistical challenges we've had, Mississippi River, Panama Canal, things like that. The Suez Canal, we could probably throw that in there too. A lot of issues around the world. But I want to start just with us being here in Houston. I know you spent some time showing some folks around the Port of Houston and thinking about, you know, what they do in terms of commodity exports, soy exports here into the Gulf of Mexico. So talk about that a little bit to start.
Yeah, I mean, the Port of Houston, from a shipping container perspective, is the fifth largest in the country, so it's pretty significant. They don't export as much soybeans or grain, obviously pales in comparison to like the Mississippi Gulf area. But they do have a number of export facilities located down here at the Port of Houston, and we were able as an organization to tour one of those a couple days ago. And so it was really illuminating, and it's a really important discussion to continue to have, because we continue to have a number of supply chain challenges really confronting our industry. We've had two consecutive years of low water on the Mississippi River. That will always be an important part and conduit for us being able to connect with our international customers. But it's just a good reminder that of the old cardinal rule in supply chain, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yes.
The more you can diversify your supply chain, the better you are as an industry, the more resilient you will be. So we think the Texas Gulf is certainly a part of that. And so we look forward to continuing this kind of partnership and really explore opportunities to see more soybeans, more soy products exported from this important region.
Well, and I think that's a great point. You know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. We've seen that here with all the challenges on the Mississippi, for instance, that we had and things like that. You know, we've talked about the PNW, of course, a great avenue. The Great Lakes, a great avenue. But also having the Houston Gulf as well. Kind of some of these, I don't want to say backups, but kind of, you know, just having a diversified supply chain is so important, Mike.
Yeah, and when you have an interruption at one of your number one supply chain option, whether that will be devastating or not depends upon if you have an option B and an option C. Those who do not, it'll be pretty cataclysmic for them. But when you've got multiple options where you can do that pivot to, say, the Pacific Northwest or to the Great Lakes or to the Atlantic coast or rail into Mexico, or even obviously local processing is a real key part of our profitability as well. The more options you have, an option B, C, and D, the better positioned you are for success.
Yeah, very, very true. Let's catch up on some of those main talking points we have when it comes to transportation and agriculture. Let's start with the Mississippi River. I've seen some chatter that some are considering the drought to technically be over in the watershed. We've seen water levels come back up. How are things looking in your eyes right now as we enter the spring season?
Yeah, we appreciate the fact that the Corps of Engineers earlier in the month announced the conclusion of the drought conditions that really started in September of 2022. That's obviously good news. Now, it's not much of a consolation prize that drought condition concluded right when the soybean export window is largely fading into the into the distance. We wanted those drought conditions to be eliminated in October, November, December of last year and January. That would have been more helpful, but obviously water levels were what they were. So that's obviously the good news. The concern is we still are not proceeding through 2024 from a position of strength. It's more from a position of weakness. When you look at water levels today at various places along the Mississippi River, they're lower now than they were last year at this time. And last year was a low water event. And when you look at 2022 and 2021, we're lower now than we were in those other years. So the moral of the story is, and especially when you look at how much ground is still dehydrated in the middle part of the United States, it won't require a lot of drought conditions or even dry conditions to proceed where we could find ourselves in a similar scenario. That's going to be a concern and obviously a point of emphasis moving forward.
Well, and I think, too, with the nice weather we're having, some of that fertilizer movement upriver here, trying to make sure we have that ability to get those inputs to put a crop in the ground here this spring. So right now it seems like things are okay, but again, we could quickly go back to where we were, Mike.
Yeah, and you can really see that, the fact that when you've got, so much of our ground is behaving like one big dry sponge. Any kind of precipitation that occurs will largely be absorbed into that ground, and which is good for the farm ground, but that doesn't mean there's going to be a lot of residual water for our inland waterway system. So, again, it's been a big reason for our success historically, this very efficient maritime highway called the Mississippi River and the tributaries that feed into it.
Yeah.
And so, but it's a concern, and we obviously would love to see kind of more of a return to normalcy.
Sticking with water, let's talk Panama Canal. Conditions down there, I know we talked a few months back. You guys took a trip to the Panama Canal, saw it firsthand. How are things looking in that respect right now?
Yeah, it's been kind of a discouraging because I've actually had the opportunity to be in Panama three times now over the last couple months. And what was notable is not just what I saw, but what I did not see. We still saw transits going through the canal, but they were container ships, cruise ships, liquefied natural gas, okay, automobile carriers, but I did not see in the three visits I've done recently, have not seen one dry bulk vessel that would be transporting soybeans or grain going through the canal. And usually I'll see a number of them. And so we're kind of on the outside looking in. And so when you have a limited number of transits that have been instituted, those transits, those limited slots that are available will largely accrue to those ocean vessels that pay a higher toll rate than an agriculture does not pay the highest toll rate. A cruise ship can easily pay $1 million to transit the canal, whereas a dry bulk vessel transporting soybeans, $200,000.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the challenge. And then number two, the ability to book a slot way in advance. These other ocean vessels, like a cruise ship, like container vessels, they're able to schedule with greater precision than agriculture can. So that's a challenge that we have. So net result, an important link in our supply chain is largely not available to us right now. That's a problem.
Well, and you add on top of that, we have the war issues in the Middle East and the Suez Canal and some ships being forced to go around the Horn of Africa instead of transit the Suez. And so that's another world shipping route that is affected right now, Mike.
Yeah, you know, you've got the two most famous canals on the planet, the Panama Canal and the Suez Canal, simultaneously are largely restricted,
yep,
particularly for agriculture, but for two different reasons. One's due to drought, one's due to terrorist activity. So then option three is to go around the southern tip of Africa. And I was recently talking to an ag exporter, and he said that this Panama Canal thing is a big deal for them. So they're having to resort, if they're going to serve the Asian market, go around the southern tip of Africa. That's a longer route. That's more expensive. And obviously, when you've got some challenges with our supply, with exports overall, then all of a sudden you introduce some additional supply chain challenges that are kind of, it's exacerbating the problem, and that's really unfortunate.
Well, so then it comes back to the mind of, okay, especially if we want to serve some of those Asian markets with soybeans, we use rail to get it to the PNW and to the West Coast. How's rail looking right now as we enter the spring season, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, rail does have, they've had some available capacity, which obviously that's obviously a good thing. You know, what we're seeing with, in the United States, there's kind of a natural area that flows to the Pacific Northwest via rail. So once you get kind of maybe 100 miles west of the Mississippi River, most of that, if it's going to be exported, it's going to be largely rail to the Pacific Northwest or maybe to Mexico. But now with the challenges at the Mississippi River and then also the Panama Canal, that draw area is getting pushed further and further east. And so now, unfortunately, there's usually a cost associated, yeah, with that. So that's the real challenge. But, you know, fortunately, I mean, it is a reminder of the fact that we're sure glad we've got a pretty robust, with all of its challenges that they do have, but we've got a really robust rail system that's obviously serving our industry.
Final thoughts here, Mike, real quick. Next 3 to 6 months ahead as we get ready for spring planting season, what are some things that you're going to be keeping an eye on in terms of the soy industry and transportation?
Yeah, really looking at that drought monitor and seeing what kind of precipitation we get. You know, obviously, this is not our export window, but then there's a lot of northbound barge shipments with fertilizer during the, yep, months of March and April. And so that's you obviously need the inputs to eventually make the outputs.
Very true.
So that's really important. So we'll be focusing on that as well.
Well, of course, it's always great to catch up at Commodity Classic. I'm sure you've been making the rounds here the last couple of days, and, you know, great attendance again. It's always good to hear firsthand from farmers as well, some of the things they're watching, concerned about, or some of the wins that they're having on their farm, isn't it, Mike?
It is. And so just in really getting that perspective from them, and that's important to really be focusing on in the work that I do. Not only the farmers, but the ultimate customers. And at places like this, you're able to interface with both.
Mike, great to catch up with you. Thanks for joining us on AOA. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jesse.
All right, coming up next here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Lubricants and Greases. We'll hear from the newly elected chair of the U.S. Soybean Export Council, Lance Rezac from Commodity Classic, on the way right after this.
Everyone has a community to lean on. A neighborhood, school, kids' teams, where you worship, work, work out, or any other place or group where you choose to belong. Communities can provide support when you need it, and even when you don't know you do. Like when it comes to preventing underage drinking and other substance use. You've talked with your kids and shared clear expectations, but you're not with them every minute. Your community members, friends and relatives, teachers and coaches, faith leaders, and other important adults in your kids' lives can be your eyes, ears, and a supportive influence when you're not around, reinforcing your messages with your kids and alerting you to warning signs of underage drinking or other substance use. So talk with your kids about these issues and involve the members of your community to help keep your kids safe, because when you talk, they hear you. For more information, visit talktheyhearyou.samhsa.gov.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Wheat growers of the North, it's time to push performance with Westbred Wheat. With regionally proven varieties like WB9606 with good stress tolerance and WB9719 with outstanding yield potential and excellent standability. Trust Westbred Wheat to help you get the most out of every acre. Now's the time. Boldly grow. Seize the season with Westbred Wheat. Performance may vary. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
When it comes to cereal disease protection, Prosaro Pro 400 SC fungicide from Bayer makes all the difference. With three effective active ingredients for overlapping control of foliar and head diseases, and a flexible application window for head scab, it's formulated to lower DON, protect yield potential, and promote superior grain quality. Prosaro Pro. The future of plant health starts here. Visit ProsaroPro.com to learn more. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
When news happens in agriculture or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-844-903-1744. 1-844-903-1744. That's 1-844-903-1744.
Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease is created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at Cenex.com. Also, last week during Commodity Classic, I sat down with the newly elected chair of the U.S. Soybean Export Council, Lance Rezac, to talk about how soybean exports are looking and some of his priorities for the year ahead. Let's listen in to that interview right now on AOA.
I've mentioned this before a few times when looking at the export picture for soybeans and really ag trade. The deck chairs have kind of shuffled around a little bit here in recent years, haven't they? Between China and South America and the U.S., there's kind of some of that ongoing ebb and flow, so to speak, right now.
There's a lot of changes going on, actually. China is the biggest soybean importer by far. They import about 60% of all the soy that's traded in the world. So almost two-thirds of the soy that gets traded goes to China. So that leaves the rest of the world with a little over a third, 40%. And so they're not, you can't replace China, you know. But luckily, China needs us and Brazil to provide them enough soy for it, because you know how the political tensions have been mm-hmm. with China. And so, and I don't blame them. They don't want to be relying on us if we're not going to be a reliable supplier, you know. And so they want to be as food secure as they can. So they're looking to diversify all their markets and all their buying along the way too. But we try hard to work with China. We're still in China. We have 16, 17 people working in China, helping to promote our U.S. soy along the way. Mm-hmm. And even some things which you wouldn't think, maybe sustainable labeling. Even China is some of that is they're going with some of the sustainable U.S. soy labeling and putting it on their packaging, because ours is more sustainable. Like I said, our big competition is Brazil. We were there a little over a month ago, and Brazil, I tell everybody, Brazil will feed the world. They have unlimited resources, nearly. They're farming maybe two-thirds of the ground they can farm. They still have over 100 million acres of just planted pasture that's already been kind of cleared. It's not even really heavily forested trees that all they got to do is go across the road, knock down a couple trees and plant it. It didn't cost them much. And so, and then they get two crops a year at least. Some places they can get three, and they get 70 inches of rain a year. And so, and their ground's about $5,000 an acre, near as we can tell. So they got some real production advantages, but they got some disadvantages too. They're trying to grow beans in a tropical climate.
Sure.
You know, Brazil is right. Part of Brazil is above the equator, you know, so so they don't get that natural drying effect that we have here in the U.S. They have to defoliate or desiccate their beans, all of them, and then they have to take them home and dry them. They dry them with wood, eucalyptus trees.
They're doing a lot of different things down there, but to your point, some of the challenges they have, I think we've seen this to some degree, that the quality of U.S. beans versus Brazilian beans, U.S. beans still are outpacing Brazil in terms of quality, aren't they, Lance?
Oh, yeah. We saw the beans coming out of the field directly. They had to take them home and clean them and dry them. And we saw them at the terminals getting ready to be loaded on a barge or on a boat. And those beans, I mean, they brought us out samples of them. They did not look that good. We need to get some numbers behind how they actually feed to animals and stuff like that. But if we showed up with beans like that here in the U.S., they'd tell us not to come back.
Sure.
You know, and so... And but the other countries know that, and I think they one interesting fact, they China won't buy Brazil beans for their reserves because they won't store. They either buy U.S. or Argentina beans for their storage because you just couldn't store it. And after seeing them, I understand why.
Well, and thinking about the changing dynamic between China, the U.S., and Brazil, I know a lot of farmers, we always talk China, Brazil, China, Brazil, China, Brazil. But in terms of the work the USEC is doing, what are some other export markets? Where are some areas that the U.S. is maybe starting to look at for more soybean exports, or maybe it's meal or some of these other soy byproducts that we have here in the U.S.? So talk about that a little bit, Lance.
Well, we're actually looking all around the world. We just had our meeting yesterday, and we have seven regions in the world. And we had all our regional directors here from each of those regions talking about what's going on. So I think Mexico is like maybe moved up to our number two soy importer from us. We do a lot of work with the Americas. We obviously have the natural advantage of just like putting it on a train and getting it down into Latin America. And so we have a good advantage there. And they like our meal. They bought Brazilian beans too. They're not too excited about them in some cases. Southeast Asia. That's a growing population. We have soy excellence centers. We have six of them around the world, and these are aimed at teaching not the administrative level people in businesses, but the next layer of people down, the ones that actually make decisions, use the soy. And we've been trying to teach them just basic things, you know, feed formulation and growing poultry and growing fish and working with them in these other countries so they can get the hang of efficiently using U.S. soy. They're not going to pay a premium and use it wrong. You know, we want to make sure using it wrong, they're growing their animals right. The developing countries, we're in a couple countries which really don't buy any soy right now. India, but that's the largest country in the world. But they had a little window where they bought a little bit of soybean meal here a year or so ago. And we're hoping that's kind of just the precursor to what's to come, because we're working with their poultry industry in India. Because the U.S. can't go and say, you got to buy more soy.
Sure.
You know, we got to come from the inside. And so we're in there working with them. We got the right to protein, trying to get to, I think they eat like maybe one chicken a year total is all the protein they, I think we can do that on Super Bowl weekend here on it.
Probably. That's very, very true. Yeah. What was it? A little over 1 million pounds of chicken wings?
Yeah, I know. That's kind of amazing. So anyway, they eat such a small amount of protein in India already. If we can get into there and get that growing, and they're a growing economy, they're going to have the money to buy that. And the first thing people want to do is eat more animal protein once they get that chance. And then another country is Nigeria we're working in. You don't think of Nigeria usually, but I think it's predicted to be the third largest country here in 15 or 20 years. It's a real growing country with a lot of people, and I think it's got enough of a growing economy that we can probably sell some soy there. So we're working in those countries too. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully those won't do me a lot of good, but hopefully my children will have some good markets. We were in China for 17 years before we sold them one soybean. We've been there 40, and we had to teach them how to raise hogs because they were just, feeding them garbage backyard hogs, and we had to teach them American modern techniques. And so we're hoping, I don't know if anybody will quite be in China, but we're hoping to have some of these other countries come along.
Once again, a conversation last week at Commodity Classic with the new chair of the U.S. Soybean Export Council, Lance Rezac. We're out of time here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.
It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
If you miss an episode of AOA, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Agriculture of America on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Loss of sight won't blind our vision. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.